Off the Ball, GAA.
Ultimately, Galway were the better team, and that's why I'm sitting here not disappointed so much, because the best teams have to win All Irelands, and that's why Galway are with cups this morning.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Off the Ball Breakfast
with UPMC Sports Surgery Clinic. When things don't move, rotate or bend like they used to, choose us to help you get back in action.
Football presenter and podcaster Dan Bardell, step right in. Dan, good morning.
Morning, chap. Sure, guy.
Have you down as a Maverick lover? Would you have loved to have seen Jack Grealish return to your beloved?
Yeah, I would have done. I looked at it yesterday with a tad of envy. I think many Villa fans wouldn't feel the same way as me, but I just felt in what was a difficult summer for Villa, maybe some outgoing that we didn't want alone of a previously homegrown player may have helped. And I just would have loved to see Jack Grealish work under Unai Emery, but as it happens, he's gone to Everton. I think that's a great move for him as well. I think he'll thrive under David Moyes, carrying the responsibility of playing in the new stadium, and I hope for his sake that he can get back to playing football every week and get himself back in England set up for the World Cup.
They say never go back, and I do wonder if that's the case with Grealish too and Aston Villa, because he had such a good thing before he left. And that Jack Grealish was the envy, I'd say, of fans from other clubs that would have liked to have signed him, that £100 million player that went to Manchester City. Guy who was playing quite central a lot of the time and basically running the show from slightly deep. But Man City, Dan, increasingly he take up this position on the left where he gets the ball, goes backwards or goes sideways, wins the odd free, and you were wondering what that outlay was for. But he was very much playing within a Pep Guardiola system. And I wonder, with all that happening, what version of Jack Grealish are Everton going to get now? Are they going to get one from a few years ago that ran the show at Villa, or this very much team player at City who isn't necessarily that impactful?
Yeah, there's no doubt his game at City was curbed and curtailed. I think he became a better footballer in terms of how he saw the game tactically and how he could adapt and play in a system. But I think what he had at Villa wasn't really sustainable, because absolutely everything went through him. The tactic was give the ball to Jack Grealish and see what you can do. And that was never going to happen at an elite team like Manchester City. And he's gone on and won all the top medals in the game in club football. And I'm sure he's really, really happy with that. But probably looking back now, one good season in four. The other three have been quite bitty, too much time on the bench. I think he only started 7 Premier League games last season, which isn't enough. I do liken this to when Jack was kind of struggling to make his way through at Villa, hadn't properly broken through. Villa were in their second season in the Championship. And it took quite an old school manager in Steve Bruce to coax the best out of Jack. He kind of gave him a free role in the middle of the park, and he went on to become the footballer that he became at Aston Villa. I see this has been a little bit of a hard reset for Jack Grealish. He'll go and play, again, quite an old school manager in David Moyes. I'm not being disrespectful there. I think Moyes is a fantastic manager, and I think Everton are a brilliant club. And I think for him, you know, in that new stadium, you know, it's a marquee signing for Everton. Like I said earlier, I think he'll carry that responsibility well for Everton and become a big player and get somewhere near the Jack Grealish that we saw at Villa again, because he is a maverick talent on his day.
What do you think happened between Jack Grealish and Pep Guardiola after that treble-winning season? Because I was saying at the top of the show, Dan, it's hardly accurate to say that Pep Guardiola didn't like how excessively Grealish celebrated the treble in the summer of 2023, and therefore for the next 2 years barely played him. It surely there's a football reason for his regular omission. And I wonder what happened between that treble-winning season and the following two campaigns.
Yeah, I think it's quite well documented that Pep wasn't a huge fan of that, but it's just Jack. He isn't the only footballer that goes out, parties and drinks. He goes away with other footballers. The difference is that Jack's just quite an honest lad, isn't he? He is what he is. He can't hide what he does. He's a household name, so it's there for everyone to see. But Jack wasn't alone in, you know, the kind of antics that he gets up to. He's away with footballers most of the time. I think the big problem for him has been durability over the last few years. He just couldn't get any rhythm, just couldn't stay fit. You know, this was a player at Villa that if he was substituted with 5 minutes to go, he looked like the world was about to end. I remember him getting subbed in a Dean Smith game with 5 minutes left, and he just looked absolutely crestfallen, looked absolutely heartbroken. And at Manchester City now, he just hasn't been able to get that rhythm of playing every single week. And that's when he thrived. And I don't think it's a coincidence that in that treble-winning season, I think pretty much that's the only season where he's been pretty much fully fit all the time for Manchester City. And I think people forget the part that he played in that. I think it was Haaland's first season when they won the treble. If you spoke to Erling Haaland about who was a massive player for him in that first year for Manchester City, I guarantee the first name that would come out of his mouth would be Jack Grealish.
He played more minutes in the Champions League than any other player, including the goalkeepers, when they ended up winning it. What's his best position now?
I was looking at this yesterday. I was trying to think, where will he fit in for Everton? Speaking to people who are connected with Everton, they kind of said he'll play as a central number 10. I do wonder with Ndiaye on the left-hand side whether that could be something that becomes quite fluid. He's a fantastic footballer as well. I can see a world where they link up pretty well and kind of dovetail and swap positions. And I think Everton have got the stability side of the game right under David Moyes last season. That wasn't their problem. They were really good, actually, in the second half of the season. They just didn't quite get the attacking fluidity right. And I think Jack probably playing centrally is where I would see him. And David Moore's kind of looking at him and saying, look, I'm gonna build this team around you. They've got a new young centre forward who's perhaps a little bit raw, but one thing he is he's quick and he'll make a lot of runs. And a part of Jack's game that gets overlooked for me is his weight of pass. He's a very clever footballer. He very rarely gets the weight of the football wrong when he's making a pass. So Everton are kind of in a mini rebuild in those attacking positions, but I think I'd see him being a central player for them.
Do you think it will take a while for Grealish to adapt? Because I'm not saying it was 2 years of inactivity at Manchester City, but he didn't play an awful lot. And now when he's going to Everton, you imagine, Dan, that he will play not just regularly, but will be quite central, much more similar to what he was at the end of his time at Aston Villa. Because you look at their signings, they haven't done an awful lot of business themselves, Everton. They got Kieran Dewsbury-Hall from Chelsea, so he could slot in midfield. And maybe Grealish goes ahead of him. They're after Tyler Dibbling from Southampton, but they've had a number of bids rejected. But they don't really have a striker that you could rely on, because Dominic Calvert-Lewin's gone and David Moyes on the record of criticising Beto over the summer. So I'm thinking, geez, the workload is going to be intense for Grealish, for a guy who was pretty much surplus to requirements for a year.
Yeah, look, I think Barry, who they signed from La Liga, will start the season. Like I said, he's a little bit raw, but I think he's the kind of striker that will suit Grealish with the traits that he has in his game. It's clear they want to strengthen down the right-hand side, and I think Dewsbury Hall will work next to Idrissa Gueye, perhaps, and be more of a shuttler, with Gueye being the one who sits back, and then Grealish plays just in front of them, and with Ndiaye coming in from the left as well and getting into central areas with the left-back overlapping. I think it is a bit of a throwback move, but I generally think that will suit Jack Grealish. And one thing he's had is a pre-season where he hasn't had injury. I think he's done a lot of training on his own. I know someone who's been with him when he's been training individually in the summer, and he looks fit, he looks fine, and he looks ready. And I think he looks serious. I think he knows, realistically, this is going to be his last chance of getting himself into an England World Cup and playing in the World Cup. And the fact that Tuchel name checked him last season, and the squads that Tuchel has picked generally since he's becoming England manager, tells me that if he's playing every week for Everton, I don't think he just gets back in the squad. I think there's a chance for us to see Jack Grealish start starting for England, which is what all the England fans wanted in 2021 when he was at Aston Villa.
Yeah, he turns 30 in a month as well. Speaking of strengthening the right-hand side, Evan Gossin, Aston Villa have signed for £26 million from Nice. A required addition, you would say.
Yeah, I mean, I was surprised by this last week. It took me by surprise, and your French accent is as good as mine there. Lovely, lovely French accent.
That's
really, really, really enjoyed it. It doesn't sound quite as good with a Brummie accent when I try and do it. But Villa needed attacking reinforcements. On the face of it, they haven't lost anyone, because you know they've held on to their big players. But actually, Rashford and Asensio were big players in the second half of that season. They raised standards at the football club. I think they got Emery. I don't think Emery was ever disengaged, but I think it upped Emery's engagement. Villa had only won 6 in 23 before they came in, and I think it kind of Emery was a bit more laser focused. I think he got some belief back. I think in the first half of the season he was getting frustrated with what was at his disposal, and he loves working with high level players. So they'll be big misses for Villa, because they were big players in the second half of that season. Again, he's maybe a tad raw, hasn't had many full seasons at the highest level, but you know, 20 goal contributions last season in Ligue 1. Ligue 1 is a high quality of league. It's a good standard of league, and many players move from that league to various other high profile leagues and do well. So I think he solves a problem because he'll predominantly play from that right hand side. But then that kind of negates the need for Villa to sign a centre forward as well, because if ever Watkins isn't going to play there, they've now got two multifunctional players in Marlon and Gasson to come in and cover. You know, he's got good physique. Villa seem to be building a big team, and Gasson's aerial, his game's come on in the last 6 months as well. So I think it's a signing that ticks a lot of boxes. But I was surprised, because I was starting to get to the point where I thought Villa was starting the season with absolutely no new signings in the outfield areas.
So two out and one in, like you say, Rashford and Asensio gone, Gasson in. So that's the right-hand side. Daniel Malin, who we haven't really seen an awful lot of. He's one of those kind of many January signings who seem to start slowly and then maybe eventually we'll get into it. Morgan Rogers on the other side, of course. And then Ollie Watkins. I was wondering, Dan, throughout the summer, why was Watkins so heavily linked with a move away from Villa Park and reportedly was interested in moving to Manchester United? I would have thought that this was going to be the year of Watkins with two of his rivals leaving the club in Rashford and Asensio.
I think it's people putting two and two together and coming up with five. There's no doubt that last season was a disruptive season for Ollie Watkins in many, many ways. He didn't get a pre-season after his England exploit. He was carrying a knock in the first half of the season and probably didn't cope great with John Duran breathing down his neck in the first half of the season. Then in the second half of the season, he had a different problem because he had Marcus Rashford, who seemed to be favoured. And I think it's pretty fair to say that Watkins was frustrated. He came out and did an interview and said he was frustrated. He wanted to play every single week. He felt that his track record at Villa justified that he played every week. And I would probably agree with that. I'm a massive fan of him. The reason he's been linked with other clubs is because he's one of the best centre-forwards in the Premier League and has been one of the best centre-forwards in Europe over the last 2.5-3 years. Now, this season, this summer, he's had a pre-season and he has looked so, so sharp. He looks like he's added aerial goals to his game. He's always been decent in the air, but he scored a fair few headers in pre-season. I think he scored 5 goals in 5 games. This looks like a centre-forward that's ready to hit the ground running at the weekend. I think knowing he's the main man is a good thing for Ollie Watkins. That's when he thrives. And if he stays fit, you know what you're getting. You know you're getting somewhere near 20 league goals. You know you're getting over 20 goals in all competitions, and he's probably getting between 10 and 15 assists as well. You know, this is a striker that does it all for me. And in my opinion, and I've said this for years, I don't think Villa could go out and buy a better centre forward than Ollie Watkins. That's just my opinion.
Dan, the big talk this summer from the people covering Villa on a daily basis has been what's going to happen with the defence, whether or not Tyrone Mings and Pau Torres are going to be part of a back three. There's been several of the preseason friendlies where they've been going back to that back three. They tried it in preseason last year. It didn't really emerge. Injury obviously interrupted. Is this what you think might be in the future, or is that one of those things that he experiments with over the summer and he picks his best back four for the Newcastle game and the season rolls on and we never see it again?
I think it'll be horses for courses. I think some games you may well see a back three. We did do it a couple of times around Christmas last year when we were shipping goals, but we became a better unit in the second half of the season. And I think Mings and Torres will share the load. I think you'll have Mings play some games, you'll have Torres play others, and it'll be interesting to see who starts against Newcastle on Saturday. But Villa definitely became a bit more resolute as the season went on. As pre-season's gone on, we haven't seen that three at the back, which leads me to believe that we won't do it, that we'll stick with what we know with that 4-2-3-1 that's worked really, really well under Unai Emery. But I don't know how much of pre-season you've seen. It feels like Villa are adapting and evolving slightly, and Villa have always been quite passive in terms of the press, whereas in pre-season it looks like they are willing to press high now. We saw a goal at the weekend, I think it was Buendia's goal, when the press was really high. Kamara wins the ball back and Buendia lashes it home. I just think we're going to see that slight evolvement from Villa this season. And the fact that the goalkeeper looks like he's staying now is big as well. Because like I said about Ollie Watkins, Villa could go into the transfer market. But for me, they struggle to get a better goalkeeper than Emi Martinez.
The last time Aston Villa played Newcastle on the opening day of the season, they lost 5-1. But that was at St James's Park. But Alex Ferguson was asked after this game then about which team has impressed him the most opening this season. And he said Aston Villa, despite the scoreline. And he was getting laughed at. And he said, no, they're seriously a good team. They ended up finishing fourth that season. Are they better now than they were then?
Yeah, they've definitely got a better team than they had back then when they finished fourth. And I think what that team's learned, they've all been together. They've been together for 3-4 years now, and the manager's been there a long time in Premier League terms now. So I think Villa fundamentally are a better team now. They've got more depth, that they've got more options, and they've got more experience. Thankfully, the game's at home on Saturday. It just seems out of those two teams, whoever is at home seems to have the game of their life and wins well. So I'm just glad that the Villa are at home. We beat them well last season, 4-1. I think in Emery's first season, we beat them 3-0 at Villa Park when they won 5 in a row, and we're going well as well. So I'm confident just because we're at home. And Villa, touch wood, haven't lost at home for pretty much a year in the Premier League. So their tax on being at Villa Park, we're a formidable outfit at home.
Overall, look, predictions are a mug's game. But I would say it's a very brave game before a ball is kicked, right? And so we can go through this, we can reference this conversation throughout the season. But in terms of the relegated three and the top five, the last two seasons, of course, the promoted three went straight back down. And I wonder, do you see anything different happening this season?
I think one of them will stay up.
Okay.
Out the new boys. My pick would be Sunderland.
Oh.
I like what they've done, but AFCON could be a problem for them in January. I mean, obviously the window's still open for a few more weeks, so they could bring more players in. But I quite like what Sunderland are about. I think West Ham are in huge trouble. If I was given £10 to put a bet on at the moment on a team to go down with West Ham's odds, I'd pick them. I think they're in a world of trouble this season, and I think in a few months' time, Graham Potter won't be there. They're just a collection of players that have played under two or three different managers now. They've had a couple of really bad transfer windows, in my opinion. The manager doesn't fit the club. I don't think the fans particularly like the manager. The stadium, soulless. West Ham are in big, big trouble. They've lost a lot of experience as well. Not necessarily players that were going to play every week. But I think when you've got that collection of players, you rely on the old heads and the players that have been there for a while. They've all gone. So I think if things start to turn toxic, which they can do at the London Stadium, I don't think there's many leaders there. You know, Bowen's a great player, but is he a leader to pull everyone together? Probably not. I'd pick at the moment. I think they're in huge trouble.
Okay. How about Ollie Watkins' old club, Brentford, who I think will probably be the unofficial/official Premier League team for Off the Ball Breakfast this season, for obvious reasons. So the new manager in, Keith Andrews. Nathan Collins is the new captain. Queevan Kelleher in goal. How do you reckon they'll fare?
I think they'll be all right.
Do you?
I think they're run well enough that, yes, there's a lot of churn. Yes, they've lost a lot of big characters in terms of the manager, and they've lost a big player in Mbeumo as well, and could probably lose Visser. But I think they know what they're doing at Brentford, and I think that's the reason that they've hired from within. You know, I've got no idea what Keith Andrews is going to be like as a manager, but Brentford must have seen something in him. And in the main, Brentford don't get much wrong. So I don't think it'll be the big struggle that many are calling for Brentford. They've had a turbulent summer, but I think they'll come out of it the other side. I think they'll definitely be three worse teams than Brentford. That would be my opinion.
So before a whistle is blown and before the window slams shut, are Liverpool retaining the Premier League title?
Up until the weekend, I thought they would, and then I've listened to a few things over the last 24 hours that have influenced me into thinking Arsenal might do it. I think it'll be closer this year. I think could be a 3-4 horse race. Chelsea for me still need a goalkeeper, but you can't overlook what they did in the summer, and they've got some fantastic players. I still just about plump for Liverpool. I think it'll be Liverpool, Arsenal, City, Chelsea would be my order.
Why do you think Arsenal could win it?
I think at the moment they look there's not been too much flux in their team. They've improved their 11, but it's not like they've lost loads of key players or anything, whereas Liverpool have had a bit more of a churn. I would say, I think Arsenal, to me, out of all out of the 3-4 teams at the top, they feel the most settled to me, and they've got the best centre-half pair, and I don't see them shipping many goals. Liverpool looked a little bit open on Sunday in transition, and they definitely need another centre-back in their books, and maybe even another central midfielder in terms of a genuine number six as well. But I just think they've had the most settled summer out of all those teams, and also they've addressed the kind of biggest problem by getting a bona fide goal scoring. And I think Zubimendi will make a huge difference to them as well in terms of control.
Who has the best squad?
That's a good question, that. If Liverpool sign Isak, it's hard to look past them, isn't it? But I think at the moment, I think Arsenal. Because I think if Liverpool get an injury to a big defender, I don't think they've got the cover. Whereas I feel like Arsenal do now. Mascara is going to be a really good player. I can see him playing a lot of games with Saliba and Gabriel from a right back position and forming a back three when they're in possession. I think Arsenal have got a bit more depth than Liverpool at the moment, but I think that can change.
Are we all sleeping on Pep? Like, he made the decision to stay. They spent $250 million in the winter transfer window. They spent something similar in this one. They're heavily linked with Rodrigo if they sell the winger to Spurs.
Obviously,
they're the best player in the world is going to be missing for them until potentially the end of September. So maybe that makes a bit of a difference when it comes to their midfield prowess. But at the same time, it is still Pep Guardiola, and he's won, 12 of the 16 leagues that he's been a manager of?
I've just not seen anything in their business that's made me think, wow. And that could be famous last words from them, but I've not seen anything that's made me really stand up and take notice. I'm aware that I could look very silly saying that in a few months' time, but I still think now, especially without Rodri, I still think they're going to be pretty easy for teams to counter on and play through. And we saw that a little bit in the World Club Cup as well. There's no way they should have been getting knocked out when they did to who they did in the World Club Cup. Once you're in that competition, you're trying to win it. I just haven't seen anything that's a massive game changer for me with Man City.
Why do you think Pep came back? Because he could easily have walked away. And the interview with GQ was really... My body is tired. I must take time off. 15 years, maybe. You're like, what? When you start saying that stuff, it seeps into the players who are like, well, you're going to be gone in 6 months anyway, so I don't really care.
Pride, not to go out on a complete whimper, which he would have done having had the league season that they've had, knocked out of the Champions League, lost the FA Cup final. I don't think he'll want to be remembered in that way. I think if they were to win the league, you'd see him go quite promptly or the Champions League. I just think he just didn't want to go out on a whimper, would be my opinion there.
I'd say most people agree with your top four, right? And then the battle for who gets the fifth Champions League place, if there is going to be one, depending on how results go. And maybe actually Palace in the Europa League would have been better for English football in the long run. But anyway, that's a separate issue. That battle for fifth... Who's in that? Are Spurs in that? Are Man United in that?
You know who my pick would be for fifth. You know exactly who I'm going to sign. In fairness, I know Jonathan Wilson comes on these shows quite a lot. I did a show with him last week and he had Villa as fifth, which made me think like I was being less biased with my predictions. I still think Newcastle will get business done. They'll be in and around it. Villa and Newcastle would be my fifth and sixth possibly. At the moment, I think Tottenham and Manchester United will improve, but I still don't think they'll be better teams than Newcastle and Villa. And I don't think they've got better managers than Newcastle and Villa as well. And Newcastle and Villa have got that experience now of being up there and battling for those positions and managing the competition. I think for Spurs, Champions League, Thomas Frank first time in that competition. I love Thomas Frank, but it's a huge ask to be competing at all these fronts. And I think there's still maybe some areas for Spurs that haven't been addressed. And that's how I feel about Manchester United as well. Fair enough. You've got a frightening front three now on paper. If that clicks, they'll score more goals because they didn't score enough goals last season. But there's still some glaring holes in that squad for me. Goalkeepers, they've got to get a goalkeeper. And if you're playing Bruno Fernandes as number six, you need the right number six next him, and I don't think they've got that in their squad at the moment. So I still think Villa and Newcastle will be better than Spurs and Manchester United.
Yeah, United reportedly after Carlos Baleba from Brighton, and Gianluigi Donnarumma won't be playing in the UEFA Super Cup tomorrow for Paris Saint-Germain against Spurs. He's been left out, so he could leave, and he theoretically could join United, which is absolutely mad for Donnarumma, I would think, my own opinion. This is Thomas Frank's first competitive game in charge. With Spurs, it feels like they're massively light. Like, obviously, last Son, it was probably time for Son to leave. And they got Kudus in. It was fine. You know, he did well at West Ham. It's probably a loss for West Ham, but I'm not sure it's a massively inspiring signing. And then Savinho's been reportedly linked. So, if Savinho joins and they have an informed Kudus, maybe they'll be fine. I think Spurs is back four when everyone's fit, really strong. But it feels to me that they're about three or four players short of being decent.
Yeah, look, defensively, they'll improve. It's pretty clear that Postecoglou couldn't sort that defence out, but there's some good defenders there. I'd back Thomas Frank to kind of get a system and a way of playing that would make them more solid and make them better defensively. But again, like a little bit like I said about Man City, there's nothing they've done in terms of signings going forward that makes me think, whoa.
Nothing there.
That's the standard. So I think Paulinho is a good signing as well. So like I said, they'll be much better defensively. Paulinho is a really, really good footballer, really, really good player. At what he does, he was brilliant for Fulham for 2 years, and I think he'll be brilliant for Tottenham as well. They've missed that kind of player in their squad with a little bit of steel in midfield. But attacking-wise, it still feels a bit more based on potential, a little bit raw. They spent a lot of money on Tell. Is he the real deal? We don't really know. They've got injuries in that area as well. I think Gibbs White would have been a brilliant signing for them, and he would have been a really good player for Thomas Frank and would have suited what Thomas Frank's probably going to try and do there. But they've not got enough in those front areas for me to get them up towards pushing for Champions League football qualification again. I just don't see that happening.
Finally, for me, where will Manchester United finish?
I think sixth at best, but it could be 10th. That's what I think. I don't think they'll be getting top. I know they haven't got European football, which people are saying is an advantage, and it could well be. But I think the best they can hope for is sixth. I don't, and they could finish anywhere between 6th and 10th for me.
All good? Done?
Yeah.
That's pretty much every Premier League side covered, nearly. Are you excited? Are you fatigued that the Premier League season has come around so soon? Are you excited?
No. Get me back into the football. The off-season is a slog. I find it really, really difficult with no Premier League, knowing I'm at Villa Park every couple of weeks. So I don't enjoy the break at all. So it can't come back soon enough for me.
The Asensio situation hasn't quite resolved itself yet. He was going to Turkey and he hasn't gone to Turkey. Is there any hope that maybe there's a last minute deadline day Marco Asensio unveiled again for a second time at Villa?
I wouldn't rule it out, but I think Buendia has played himself in
at the moment. He's going to stick around, is he?
I think so. He wants to stay. He wanted to stay all summer, but what he's done in pre-season, he's shown that he's maybe got a bit more than maybe people thought, and that he's given himself a chance. He'll see football at the weekend, whether it be from the start or from the bench. So I think him playing himself in would alleviate the need for Villa to take a financial risk with either a loan or a permanent move again. But Emery does love Asensio, so if he thought he could get a good deal, I wouldn't rule it out.
Dan Mardell, what a time to be alive. Enjoy it.
Thanks, chaps.
All right, folks, get your finger out and pit your football knowledge against Team OTB to win big. There's €2,500 for the winner of the OTB Final One Standing League on the William Hill app. Guaranteed winner, and it's exclusive to our own league. Just sign up at William Hill Final One Standing. Use the code OFFTHEBALL, that's all one word and all caps, and make sure you sign up before Friday the 15th at 8 o'clock when the new season kicks off. €2,500 to the winner, guaranteed.